about 3 or 4 years ago. And the journey, the journey, the journey was long. She got a job at a local factory, sent money back home to her family. She said,
my home.
La, la,
this is where I la, belong.
La, la,
I hope everybody
la,
out there
la,
is
la,
saying
la, la,
that
la, la,
to yourselves and to each other, to your neighbors, to our community.
This is where I belong.
And now we just have to make it so. It's up to us. Welcome to KMUN's Arts Live and Local. This is Carol, your host, and I'm glad to be here. And see, this is my home. I've only been here 51 years. Well, I guess that's longer than Brooklyn, my time in Brooklyn, but that was my home too. The whole country is my home, our home. We're extremely lucky. Those of us who live here in the Pacific Northwest, we are the fortunate people. And we'll talk a little more about that later. And my first guest is got stuff to expand on that as well. So I will send this show out as I always do, because we need it to ceasefire, stopping all the wars, justice and peace for all people everywhere, food and shelter, compassion, care, choice, peace and healing, and special healing to some local and other friends, to Liz H., to Paul, Lisa, Tori, Hope, Janet, Gina, Renee, and Ann E., and Ann R. D., to Karen, to Ed, Reva, and Kate, and to you and me, because we all need healing of some sort, body, spirit, mind, heart, whatever is your particular need. And Monday is a beautiful birthday. It's a double birthday. One right here, one of our Brownsmead boys, only he's not a Brownsmead boy anymore, neither of those. Happy birthday to Otis. There's only one Otis in Clatsop County, I'm sure. You all know who that is. And 3,000 miles away, his birthday sister, Piper. Happy birthday to you. Peter Marsh has a birthday coming up. And Nanette, be healthy. And Arlene just celebrated a birthday. Marilyn, lots of birthdays. Yours, if you were born in the next 364 days, happy birthday to you. And to the rest of us, there aren't any rest of us. So, my first guest, I'm very excited about this because I missed her first time around, and I've been looking forward to learning more. This is special for our town, actually. Astoria figures largely. Chelsea Rose is here with the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project. And Chelsea is the director of Southern Oregon University Lab of Anthropology. And I've asked her to tell us what she is doing here. She's wearing a great T-shirt. Well, I won't tell them about taking your shoes off. Oh, wait, no. She's also going to tell us about an exciting event happening tomorrow night here in Astoria at Obelisk Brewery. So welcome, Chelsea.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Yes, yeah. And shoes were left at the door because I took a pause from our work in a very muddy archaeological site to make this little trip.
Oh, now, that isn't a teaser. I don't know what is. What are you doing? What's this archaeology?
So we are here as part of the summer field school. It's an archaeological field school that's run through SOU under the umbrella of the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project. We have students here from across the state, including Southern Oregon University, Portland State, Linfield College. So we have a bunch of different students here, and they're all with the goal of, learning about the science of archaeology and public outreach and how to kind of communicate this to the public. So we started out, we spent 2 weeks in Grant County in Eastern Oregon, and then we ended up coming over to the coast. And since we've been here this last week, we've been looking at a variety of sites that we've uncovered that we thought might be able to tell us a little bit more about Astoria's early Chinese community. We know that folks were in the canneries and fishing, and we just want to know more about their lives.
Okay. I knew that it was archaeology, but I was thinking cultural archaeology. as opposed, but then when you told me you took your shoes off because you got out of the field, I thought, where are they digging? So are you willing to tell us, or do you not want a crowd?
Yeah,
visiting?
Well, it is not somewhere that the public would be able to access, we are digging, you know, in a modern neighborhood, a residential neighborhood that historically was one of the sites where Chinese American farmers were working, and they were growing a lot of the food and raising some of the animals that were feeding the town, the community. And so we're really excited to find out a little bit more about that, because there were a lot of Chinese Americans involved in early farming operations. A lot of times they're known as Chinese gardens. There were several areas around Astoria that had them at the time. But there hasn't been a lot of archaeological work into those, and certainly not a lot of other documentary evidence that really talks about those early farms.
What kind of years are you, when you say early?
Yes. So 19th century, for sure. So these would be, you know, in the late 1800s. I'm not sure how late this, well, the subdivision where we're working right now, I think, is put in the 40s, 1940s. So it was definitely, the farming operations were gone by then. But a lot of these were, you know, late 18th, maybe early 20th century operations across town.
Was the land owned by the people, or was...
I'm not even sure about that. And I think it probably varied in some instances. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of different regulations, laws, ordinances that targeted Chinese Americans and the immigrant community that would sometimes say you couldn't own property, or you couldn't have a business, or you couldn't do this or that. So there's a variety of ways that folks navigated those acts, mm-hmm. you know, those efforts to kind of, you know, get them to leave or to not put down roots. Right. But one of the amazing things about Astoria, and why we love being here so much, is boy, that did not work here, because there is a really thriving descendant community. And that's been really, really cool to see, you know, how successful so many of those folks that are like three or four or five generations mm-hmm. down from these early Chinese American residents, how successful they have made, you know, these lives in this town.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know if it's, there's no such thing as perfection, but I don't know if it's as good as it gets at this point, but it's taken a while. You know, we've heard the stories of people with a PhD having to say, with a building named after him, for that matter, Dr. Law, having to say, I'm not going to visit there because I wasn't welcome there before. And until apologies were rendered, so that the awareness, and I'm sure there was hurt, but most of all, it was getting people to acknowledge and educate themselves. Yeah. So it's been a long history.
And that is a really good segue into our talk tomorrow, because Dr. Jennifer Fang, who's a historian that works with us at the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project, she's going to be kind of talking about how there was a lot of erasure about this Chinese immigrant history to Oregon and Astoria, and then how it's being reclaimed, yeah. and how that is allowing for this population to get their rightful place in history as really important members of the community. I talked with Mac on a different podcast mm-hmm, for this right. radio earlier this week, and one of the things that we were discussing was how Astoria is known for its Scandinavian immigrant population, but for many years there were far more immigrants from China
Absolutely.
Here. And so that is a really striking erasure of that history, and so it's really important to try to bring those stories, those family histories, that important role that population played in the local economies back into the frame, so people can really understand how this place came to be and the people who, you know, built the streets, you know, canned the salmon, did all mm-hmm. the things that modern residents, you know, are able to take advantage of the infrastructure that was funded by those efforts.
Is it true that in the Chinese population, only men were allowed to come so that they would not procreate and have families?
No, not exactly. Okay. So the early immigrant wave was largely men because of of course, a lot of the immigrants from China came with the gold rush. So people were coming all from all over the world, largely men, to look for gold and strike it rich. And then later we get the exclusion law in 1882, which doesn't allow laborers to bring their families over. And so then you get kind of the barriers to chain migration, which a lot of other folks that are immigrants to these places were able to enjoy those benefits. And so that's when you start to get kind of this class-based system of exclusion, where if you were a merchant or if you had a business like that, then you could bring over your family. But if you were working in a field that was classified as, you know, some kind of labor, then you couldn't bring your family over. And exactly right, that it was targeting, it was trying to discourage people from building generational roots. And that was very successful in most rural areas in Oregon. You don't have the descendant communities from these really large historical populations.
So are there? Can you give us some of the other parts of Oregon that were populated?
Yeah.
But that didn't take.
Well, and this is one of the things I love to talk about, because when I first started doing this work, the kind of what people mainly thought about Chinese population centers in Oregon was Jacksonville, down where we're from in southern Oregon, Portland, Astoria, and John Day. John Day is famous for the Camwa Chung building, which is now a state park. But since we've done this work, we have now created maps that show kind of dots that represent population centers or industries that had a lot of Chinese migrants across the state. So we're talking Klamath Falls, Lakeview, you know, all the way Baker City and farther east, you know, Astoria, Coos Bay, Brookings, you know, all these places in between, Roseburg, you know, all over we found these Chinese populations using census records, using place names. So there's a China Creek or China, you know, a lot of those kind of names on maps. And once we started kind of pulling these threads, we realized, you know, even more so, this is Oregon history. This is not just a footnote or an interesting aside. This is Oregon history. And a lot of places had really large numbers of Chinese immigrants in the 19th century.
Yeah, that Exclusion Act really did a number on people. How did this get started?
Yeah, the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project was born in 2016, 2017, when a couple different archaeologists that were doing work on Chinese immigrant sites across the state realized, wow, you know, we should really be working together and not looking at this in such a site-specific way, but more as a larger story. Because a lot of the population of folks that came over to mine for gold then pivoted to work in the railroads or pivoted to help grow hops, you know, or in the salmon and canning industry. So there's a lot of the same folks are moving around. So we realized if we started to kind of scale out, we could think about this story in a different way that would have been more consistent with the way this community, which was varied around the state and beyond, would have experienced it. And that has been such a rewarding enterprise, because this collaboration has brought together, you know, Southern Oregon University, three different national forests, Oregon State Parks, the Medford District of the BLM, you know, Oregon Historical Society, the Clatsop County, you know, Heritage Museum folks, and, you know, and more. We're working with federal, state, local agencies and organizations from all over. And that has really allowed us to leverage limited resources, pool our efforts, bring in experts, you know, and just it's just added so much value. Well, our current field school is funded in part thanks to Senator Merkley and his team, which really advocated for us, recognized the importance of this project and what it could contribute to Oregon history, and helped get it on the congressionally directed spending bill. And so that was able to fund 2 years of educational outreach, field schools, and a bunch of different programming, which is all open access and a really collaborative, so that this story will not disappear when we stop digging, but will be there for future researchers to build off of.
I thought you were going to say when we stop getting funding.
Funding is a little bit tighter these days and very precarious. but we, you know, we've got a pretty good, you know, train rolling down the tracks now, and we're hoping that we're hoping we can make it, weather the storm, and continue the good work.
And so many people vested.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting. Now, did you, you obviously are involved in anthropology, the director of Southern Oregon University Lab of Anthropology, but did you have an interest in Chinese history or are you from Oregon?
I grew up, I went to high school in Oregon and have been here now much longer than I was anywhere else. But okay. I grew up in Northern California and in the Wild West, in Gold Rush country. So okay. on both sides of the border. Right. And so, you know, Chinese immigrant community is a big part of that story. And when you say, so the laboratory of anthropology, you know, archaeology is a subset of anthropology, which right. is the study of people. So we study specifically the people of the past. But because we are historical, we do historical archaeology, it's the more recent past. And so we are working with descendant communities whenever possible. We do a lot of ethnography. In fact, we're talking with a bunch of folks tomorrow, descendants of this community in Astoria, which we're very excited about. So we want it to, you know, we recognize that there's a lot of people that have a lot more knowledge on the subject than we do. We can just add in the artifacts and the archaeological mm-hmm. component to help, you know, fill in some gaps. But we want to talk to all the folks that right. have part of this story.
Well, it's I have a feeling that some of the local folks will also discover things about other parts of Oregon
yeah.
that maybe haven't kind yeah. of become aware.
And that's what I'm really hoping people that go to this talk tomorrow, it's free, it's Obelisk Brewery, 6 p.m., but they will get a sense of how much this is really a community story and an Oregon story. And I'm hoping that people will start to think about things a little bit differently about, you know, what we consider history, how we learn history, and how historical memory is shaped, and how this population that was so central to this community and others yes. were kind of pushed to the side of the yeah. history books.
Yeah. Pushed to the side, pushed out.
Yeah.
So the talk is called Uncovering and Mainstreaming Chinese American History in Oregon. Dr. Jennifer Fang, who is she?
Jennifer Fang is a historian who is always a delight to listen to, and I've had the pleasure of working with her. We were guest co-editors of the 2021 edition of the Oregon Historical Winter edition
oh, yes.
of the Oregon Historical Quarterly.
Yes.
And it was all about, it was a thematic volume on the history, what we had been learning up till then about the Chinese diaspora in Oregon. And so, you know, she's just a brilliant scholar. She is an advisor on the project, and historian for the project, and we're just so thrilled for her knowledge. And I'm very excited to see the talk, and I think others will enjoy it as well.
It's going to be fabulous. How long have you been... You just said that was 2021, and
yeah.
you were already into it. So how long has this been going on?
Yeah, so I first started doing archaeology in Southern Oregon about 20 years ago on Jacksonville's
Whoa.
Chinese community. And then since then, you know, just kind of branching out around the state. So that, but people have been looking, archaeologists have been looking into the Chinese diaspora, you know, archaeological sites for 60 years.
Wow.
They have been people
okay.
digging on these sites. And of course, you know, the Chinese immigration to the U.S., especially the West where we are, really starts in large numbers, you know, like, you know, with the gold rush. You up here are a little bit different because you got the fur trade and stuff. We don't
right.
have that as much down south. But there's a lot of folks coming in from China in the 1850s to our area, and then spreading across the state by, you know, the gold rush in Eastern Oregon, 1861, 62. And then you get railroads, and Chinese immigrant labor is really central to mm-hmm. the 19th century railroad building. And then because of the Exclusion Act and the impact that had on new immigration, you know, folks coming to the U.S.,
yeah.
The population that's here kind of ages out. So you lose the skilled workforce. And what happens is other minority populations start coming in. You get a lot of Japanese immigrants and Sikh immigrants and folks mm-hmm. from, you know, the mm-hmm. Philippines come into the canneries and stuff
right.
like that. So there's a lot of different populations that kind of fill that gap that was left when the Chinese immigrant labor pool ages out.
When was the Exclusion Act? wiped? When was it wiped?
Oh, well, 1943. But it's not really until the 60s that meaningful immigration from China is allowed, because there was still like a really strict quota. So in 1943, the Exclusion Act is over. And that, you know, it's not one act. It really shifts and changes over time, because I don't even know how many amendments and revisions. It wasn't ever supposed to be permanent at first. But and so it really was a moving target that was really challenging for folks to have to navigate. And one of the things that's really important in our work to us is to not just read the story of Chinese immigrant experience through the laws and the things they couldn't do, but instead look for the resistance and the survivance and the persistence. And I think that that's really where we see the humanity and really get to know these folks and what they had to go through to build lives here in places like Astoria, which was very different than their immigrant neighbors from other parts of the world.
Yeah. And once again, we see why immigrants are so important, including probably all of our listeners, but certainly this population. And here in Astoria, we know we also have, of course, the Garden of Surging Waves, which is a whole nother thing. Well, very exciting. Okay, my guest is Chelsea Rose, part from the Southern Oregon University Lab of Anthropology, the director, and the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project is happening, has been happening for quite a while, it turns out, but they are here. They're digging in the dirt, but tomorrow night, Dr. Jennifer Fang will be speaking at Obelisk. That's 590. It's on the corner of 6th and Bond. Obelisk Brewery.
In Chinatown, in historic Chinatown.
Oh, that's right. You know, there. I'm sure you do know. A couple of books have been written. Novel and nonfiction. It starts at 6. Any idea how long she plans to?
I think it'll be, you know, about an hour or so. There'll be talks and then time for Q&A, which we hope folks have some good questions. And we look forward to the discussion.
Beautiful. Tomorrow night, that's Saturday the 26th, 6 o'clock at Obelisk Brewery, Uncovering and Mainstreaming Chinese American History in Oregon, and especially right here in Astoria. Thank you so much for coming in, Chelsea. And thanks for coming to Astoria and doing this whole project. It's very exciting.
Thank you so much for having me, and hopefully we will be back next summer with more things to discover.
Okay, well, I'll see you right here.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
And as we know, it is a passion and an important subject, especially right now, but always. And also tomorrow at 12 o'clock, INCO, that's Indivisible North Coast Oregon, has put together or has joined the national movement. And the vigil tomorrow is Families First. And it's on Marine Drive or Leif Erickson at 30th and East. So that's across from Safeway. It is on the south side only. That's the non-riverside for those with impaired directional senses like me. And here's a piece of music that I think goes well with that. And thanks again to Carrie Gallagher. 5 Stair Steps with O Child. KMUN, Astoria, and Tillamook. Arts Live and Local. This is Carol. Glad you're here with us.
Of a be brighter.
Right now. Well, actually, tomorrow at noon. Come and join us in the streets. Bring a sign supporting families and perhaps why you are concerned for our country in terms of what's going on for families and children. And if you don't have a sign, that's okay. There'll be extras probably.